how did we get into those horse farms? I said there's 80 horse farms down there, and all of them had wasted all that those board fences, and they mowed the stuff so the crickets couldn't even have a cover. And we got into this fella.
Yeah, at the Hobo Ranch.
Yes. Yeah. How'd we get into the interview?
I've forgotten what started
that
off.
I forget the tradition. Well, he was interesting.
Yeah. He's one of those really stalwart, strong characters. I mean, I wouldn't want him for a friend, but I sure wouldn't want him for an enemy either. And he's not an open person with you. You know, when you... He appears to be a quite reserved person.
Yeah.
And his son is old, he's probably 25 or something now. And you can see the son's been worked over with too much power. His son doesn't have much strength to him.
Oh. That old man's held the reins.
That man is a strong man. Strong man. I mean, he just doesn't allow other existences, say, other than his own. And maybe that's what's made him successful on the horse raising, because he had his mind about it, and he happened to be right, too. He's a ruler. He's a lord and a ruler. Yeah, they don't allow no long hair on that ranch.
Long hair just don't get there.
No, His son had modestly long hair, and he wouldn't even let him mix with the ranch hands. I mean, he has a whole regime of governing and what's going on a ranch. See,
and he still does it?
Yes, sir.
Well, is that something?
Yeah. Oh, they've got, it's very orderly, very orderly. You know, you drive by ranches and farms. Things like you don't see a lot of activity. And you don't conceive that he's running that tighter than John Knox Insurance Company in Jacksonville. Well, hell, the girls can wear pants up there now instead of skirts or something like that. This guy's got regulations you can't break, or you're fired. And they got a bunch of ranch hands, too. A whole bunch of people work down there. They have their own private theater. Stuff like that.
That enough for that?
Sure, yeah. It's not three or four people. I don't know how many it is. I never saw. You don't see anybody around there. I don't know where in the hell they are, but it's got to be a big place. Well, good God, look at his own little private ranch. It's got, it's still phenomenal. I mean, it's got your ranch inside of it, fenced off with a 10 or 12 foot cyclone fence and cross fenced. And then his is around that. See, I don't know how many acres he's got. It's phenomenal. And that big house that's just sitting there, he just built it because he wanted to build it. And he doesn't live in it. There's nothing in the bloody house. They got a barbecue pit inside that can barbecue two whole hogs. And there's not a damn thing in the building. And it was 5 years before the building was built that he didn't have a dime. Or 10 at the most. Wasn't 10, I know that. A little over 5 years.
When he came here, he just had gas money.
That's about it. He's sort of like that black man in Micanopy. There wasn't any way out for him. Didn't have enough money to leave. Yeah, you see, Dreyfus... I think we got on tax deductions or something. What kicked it off, because Dreyfus... You knew that. They're supposed to be tax deductions, all these fancy ranches. Well, hell, that's the reason Dreyfus bought it. He needed a tax write-off. Well, I'll be damned. The first year of operation, I think they cleared $1 million. And last year, it was the second highest money-producing race ranch in the country. It was this hobo.
And this fellow was behind it all.
Yeah. Oh, he does things like... He does something to the hamstrings on the horses, burns them or something like that. He doesn't run the horses. He swims the horses. And a lot of, to me, bizarre practices. They talk about burning animals and things like that. And, but it works. His horses move. They're fast. And there's something about that swimming that evened them up and gave them a strong edge over other horses. Damn horses got a swimming pool, guy.
where the jockeys go when they swim?
I don't know. I don't know if they have a jockey on them or not. And the fact that, like, he did it all. I think he's got a vet now. But he wouldn't even have a vet around. Hell, you know, they're not there when you need them. He did everything. Old Ron was telling me, one of the horses, one of his better ones, jumped a gate or something, ripped his stomach open, all the guts fell out. Well, put that horse back together by himself.
They'll stand still when they hurt themselves.
Yeah, this man's just capable of doing that. And I've seen him a few times and talked with him. That was about 2 years ago, I reckon. And, like I say, I don't think he's anybody you want to go out drinking with. He don't look too jocular.
But he's behind all that.
Yeah.
God, they just reported on Oliver Cromwell. Somebody wrote a book on him. You see, he's the Lord Protector. Hell, that's another Cromwell, isn't it?
Good. In his own right, I suppose he is. And that, in his world, and he's got it outlined, those round peg fences. You know, they've got the long sapling tree type fence, you know, be a 4 or 5 inch pole, and they've got something like a big pencil sharpener. They stick the ends of those things into these pencil sharpeners and then punch them into the fence post. They've got holes bored in them. It's that, oh, I've forgotten, they're 20 foot long, I reckon, between fence posts or something like that.
Yeah. Oh, you mean they've departed?
They don't have a regular fence.
Yeah.
They're the poles.
Well, what do you know?
They're all painted blue. Miles of them. Really, and it's so amazing that this man has acquired practically a fiefdom of his own just from the droppings from the ranch. You know, the biblical stories talk about people going around and picking up the leftovers, what do they call it, from the field? Gleanings?
Gleanings.
Gleanings. Well, that's what he picked up, was the gleanings.
Yeah.
And that's rich over there. That's money.
Yeah. And that's one of the big ones. That's one of the big ones.
Yeah, I reckon it must be the biggest one then, if it's the second, and I don't know who the first was, whether they were in the Ocala area or not. But see, Ron Chris was the fellow that introduced me to him. And Ron's dealt with him, and Ron's gotten a couple of horses sired by him. Got the papers on him. Oh, hey, hell. The way he started off with the whole deal, I reckon that's the way they met him. I don't know. The son wanted a Porsche. Well, let's see. Those things run about, at that time, at least $10,000. a little bit more now. You know, that's that car is about from here to the sink long. And, two people crowd it. Pay $12,000 for it now. Well, he wanted one, and he got one. But what they used for the down payment was a stud for Ron's horse. Well, that's horse trading.
Ron's a dealer.
Yes, sir. Well, his brother was a dealer. Ron was a salesman. Ron had the horse. His brother is the one that just got out of prison, the 90-day stretch in prison. It's Ron Crist and Phil Crist. And Phil was the Porsche dealer and the owner, and Ron was a salesman. And Ron's always a ne'er-do-well and a con artist. And he's a troublemaker, but he never gets caught. Ron doesn't get caught. Phil is easier going and has got more consideration about other people, and he always gets caught. I don't know what it is. And Ron is a bizarre personality. I mean, he's very bizarre. And continue on with that, try and pick up on some background on him. That's the way he met the guy. So he's dealt with him off and on. And so he had a 2-year-old, I think, that this man said, well, hell, I'll buy it. So Ron packs him up in the trailer and takes it off down there and unloads him. He says, yeah, I'll give you $1,500 for him.
Wait a minute, not my mind wandered.
That's Ron had a 2-year-old colt.
Yes.
Racehorse.
Yeah.
And he was going to sell him to the man at Dreyfus Ranch, yeah. Hobo Ranch.
Yeah.
I just remember his name.
And he said he'd give Ron $1,500.
Yeah, Ron put him in the trailer, took him from his place down to Hobo Ranch and unloaded him. And the guy walks around, looks at him, says, well, I'll give you $1,500 for him. And Ron said, you son of a bitch. Said, you can go to hell. It's Ron dealing with this man. Put him back, didn't say another word to him, put him back in the trailer, took him down and sold him for $25,000 or $3,000 or something. See, Ron knew it. This man, as much money as he's made, he's not stopping. He would have paid $1,500 for it and gotten a $3,000 horse.
Knows horses well.
Yeah,
well.
He knows them, yeah. Ron knows horses. He raises race horses. He's got 10 acres that he raises them on.
Oh.
Nothing.
That's enough.
Yeah, just a couple of them, a couple of good lines. Yeah, that man's something. See, if Ron hadn't have been on the ball, that very afternoon, that man could have picked up $1,500.
He doubled his money.
He just give him the money and would say, hey, boy, put that in the trailer and take it down to so-and-so. And tell him I sent it. And he probably would have gotten $4,000 for it. You know, if he'd put his approval on it.
Yeah.
See, Ron's a whip snitch. He doesn't have any name. That, God almighty, can you imagine stud fees going for $5,000 and $10,000 and $25,000 just for the stud fee alone. Ron traded, I forgot, it was $1,800. It was a down payment, or partial down payment. I think they actually showed it. The bank didn't really know how to handle this process. Things were looking different. Regressing or something, going back to trading horse stud fees for cars. They didn't know exactly how to handle that. Yeah, looks like we've got a collection station going.
They'll do this by remote control pretty soon, won't they?
I hope.
They don't have to do all that traveling around every month. They don't need to do it every month anyhow. They can do it quarterly.
I think that's habit.
It just happens. That's right. So. Now, Ron, let me see. He did a little moonshine himself.
No, Ron, he wasn't in on that moonshine with Phil.
Oh, Phil did it.
Phil did the moonshining.
That was early.
See, there are two, they're both honest thieves, the two of them.
Yeah.
Don't make any bones about it.
Yeah.
But Ron and Phil are different. I can't lay a finger on it. But Ron hasn't gotten in any process like bootlegging. I think he's probably recently maybe tried his hand dealing in dope or something like that. But
that's scary.
Well,
that's scary.
Scares
the peanuts out of me.
Woo! Well, that, see, bootlegging's a thing of the past.
Money
is in dope.
So they can't avoid that money.
No, if it comes around,
they gotta follow the money.
See, these are redneck boys who didn't, it's been the college crowd that works with the marijuana and things like that. Well, I'm telling you, guy, rednecks are closing in. They see the money and they're coming. Hell, just about, there's all kinds of, they're ready to turn their farms in. to growing marijuana. There's so much money in it. I've run into that all kinds of crazy places. It's amazing. Yes, sir. Bootlegging. Woo. No, that's... You don't make money in bootlegging like you do in selling grass and things like that. So that's where they're moving into. I don't know. I would say that Ron might have done it a little bit on the side. I don't know that he's ever gotten involved in it directly. But he never set himself up in that kind of business. But he always did more bizarre acts than Phil. He was mean, pure mean. Oh hell, he'd do things like Phil came out this house to visit him, and he hid underneath the house. And when Phil walked up the stairs, he'd tackle him, start beating up on him. That's his brother. And this was like 2 years ago. They weren't 18, 16-year-old kids.
Why'd you run into them?
I don't know how in the world I ever met that guy. But Ron is he exasperates Phil. And Phil's no pussyfooter, see? And that's... God almighty. He did such things as... Ron, when he was a Porsche dealer, had the general... Porsche manager of the area, who was a German, barely could speak English. They were at the University Inn drinking whiskey, see? And Ron was with him, and it was Phil and Ron and this German. Well, Ron is, Phil knows Ron well enough that if he's going to leave a tip on the table for the waitress, he makes sure Ron is gone first before he puts the tip down, because Ron will take the tip that he puts down. So, I mean, this really goes on. I mean, the guy actually takes the money. See? So Phil tries to make sure he's out of the place before he puts the tip on the table for the waitress. Well, this time, Phil went outside to talk to somebody, probably a waitress or something. And left the two of them in there. Well, Ron said to the German, says, hey, come on. So Ron figures he's going to get out from paying the check. So he leaves. He goes inside of the University Inn, which is a pool area. It's enclosed. It's got a two-story building all the way around it. He says, follow me. You've seen the University Inn. It's tall. All right. He climbs up the drain pipe. And the German is following him. Goes over the roof and down the other drain pipe. And there's this Porsche manager just following right along. Good Lord. Got out of the place. Of course, Phil had to pay the bill 2 days later because they knew he was there. Yeah, he just...
was he the one that got the 90 days?
No. Ron, like I said, Ron doesn't get caught. I don't understand.
Phil got 90 days.
Phil got 90 days, sure. Yeah. Phil's always trying to... he's grumbling about Ron and...
Now, what was that for?
Oh, swapping serial numbers on a car.
Oh, that's the fella.
That's the university man, too.
That's the...
Grissom.
He just couldn't take it.
Oh.
Phil used his car.
Yeah. And Grissom got a notion that he was wronged.
Or he borrowed his license tag.
Well, it was a number plate.
Yeah.
And Grissom figured that Phil done worse than that. And I'm not saying Phil hadn't done worse than that. I hadn't gone into that part of it. But that's all Grissom knew, that happened, for sure.
Yeah.
And he dogged it until he got him sentenced. And all the local agencies flat turned him down. They wouldn't bother with it. Federal government obliged him.
Had to go to the federal people.
Well, Buster, talking about local people, local agencies, this man had Buster do work on his car. He had owed him $100. Buster had better than $50 in parts. The man says, I'm going to try the car out. Well, he took off for Miami.
Trying it out.
Buster called the police department. Said, here's the man's tag number. It's what his car looks like. And he owes me $100. And he left here. And he furthermore, I paid $50-something for parts that are in that car. He said, there's not a damn thing we can do about it. He said, we can't waste our time going around chasing people like that. There's no service for Buster on that. Oh, he was perturbed, to say the least. He had a lot of words on that one. Really did him in. But Buster couldn't quite afford to go to the federal government on that. So his recourse stopped with the sheriff's department, or whatever he called. Probably sheriff's department.
Yeah.
He didn't go to any higher court.
So, you just have to know when you're dealing with them that they're going to beat you.
Yeah.
And they think so much faster than you do. You just figure that they'll have their way. God.
Yeah, that Grissom was something else. He didn't see. He got his satisfaction.
Maybe it's built up in his mind. He bound to have had experience with him before.
Oh, he used to damn near live at that Porsche place. I don't know that he had anything else to do.
Oh, I see.
You know, he's supposed to be running the art department at the university, but he spent more time at the Porsche place because every time I ever showed up, he was there. I could pass by and he was there. And he wasn't there as part of the group. He's just there hanging around. Working with that damn car. And you talk about a mistress. You want a mistress, you buy a Porsche. And, oh, good Lord, you got one.
Yeah.
You got one. Use up time, money, ego, just anything you want to name.
Yeah. And he fell for that.
Yeah.
And he didn't know what was happening to him.
Well, he found out. I think he's gotten rid of it now. I believe he did. Yeah, that damn Porsche made him send somebody to jail. He might have had some second thoughts on that after a while. I don't know. You know that car thing? It was a nice one happened yesterday in Micanopy. This fella drives up, Buster and I, and Bill out there talking. And Buster says, "Well, goddamn, look at there. Last time I saw that car, it was a total wreck. And here's this trim 65 Ford Comet, or Mercury Comet, or whatever in the world they are, Falcon, the smaller version Ford, little coupe. Nice looking car. And this guy had just gotten out of the body shop, and it was royal red, sparkling, just beautiful shape. Chrome all perfect on it, except the grill. He got one of those on order." And that guy got out of the car and exchanged a few words. He says, "You see here, it's first goddamn thing that happened when I got out, one of those big dogs comes up here and jumps on this car. That's why I don't like big dogs. I got a small dog. They don't jump up on cars." And he went home, and we went over that car with a fine-tooth comb, see? Found a dent in the hood. He's going to have his hood redone, a dent in the trunk. That's going to be redone. And somebody said something about, "Well, how much you take for it?" He says, "You can't touch it." Can't touch it. And later on, I just sort of sidled up there and says, "Look, I'll give you $200 for it." He said, $200? Hell, somebody offered me $200 for my dog and I wouldn't even sell him. That was a red world for him, and he lived it. That car. God Almighty, I bet there's nothing that car lasts for it doesn't get.
Yeah.
Even just sawing the legs off of dogs. Don't jump on it. Oh, he said, when it got wrecked, he said, "Why, there's this goddamn nigger that ran into my side," and if he'd just gone a little bit further, he would have missed the door and just hit the back part, and I wouldn't have had to bought a new door. Just that much further. But he messed up the whole damn side. And you know what? If I'd have had a gun, I'd have shot the son of a bitch. Probably would have too.
Now, how did he happen to hang up on you and Buster and Bill?
Well, he just got his car. He just finished washing his car. He gotten it out of the shop and washed the dust off of it. Water's still trickling out of the window. We were one of the first people he ran across that could look at the car. he knew Buster, sure. I don't know him. No, he knew Buster, because Buster was talking about, I might have recognized the car before it was painted or something.
Oh, Buster said, yeah.
Buster knew it. He said, "Look at there, that thing was, the whole side was gone when I last saw it." But he didn't stop for any other reason. He didn't stop past time of day.
he just stopped for a little performance, yes. Little exhibition.
Oh, we looked at the engine.
Oh, did you?
Everything. Oh, it wasn't just the outside. No, it's everything. Oh, Bill looked inside. I don't know why I didn't get more observant. He said, Wade, did you look in the floor mats? No, I didn't see them. He said, well, it's those little thin paper floor mats that you find in used car lots. It says your best buys at the First National Bank. And I'll be damned. I don't know whether he gets new ones all the time or he's that tender with his car that he keeps those little paper mats over the other mats. You know, the used car people have them put inside to cover up so you won't dirty up the floor mat getting in and out of it while you're trying to sell it.
Yeah.
And the banks give them these little things.
That's like the old Coontail they used to put on the radiator.
Mm-hmm. Hell, he found another nick. Somehow he knew exactly how it happened. I don't know. He said, I was in the parking lot, and I made sure I parked 100 yards from every car around there so nobody banged their door against my car. This is a 65. And he says, look there. And it's right in the tip corner of the front fender. There's a nick, you know. Barely there. And he said somebody came by with a ring or something and nicked it while it was in the parking lot. Just hit it, and he said they just must have kept going. And the dog scratch was barely visible.
But to him, it was visible.
Oh, good Lord. I'd forgotten all about that.
Well, that is an extreme case, isn't it?
He had it. He had it bad. He'd probably give up drinking and everything else for that car. Oh, me.
Let me tell you, I was sitting at your desk. You weren't there on the last day I was there. And I was making a call to this fella, and I found out that he had a private phone, but it wasn't a public number. So I just got the address so I could write him. And I looked right there where I had been working on one of your little memo pads, and you had the bastard's name already written down there. Julian Jerkins Meyer.
Oh, no.
Attorney for Mick.
Good Lord. Isn't that something?
Yeah, it's hard to believe it. It looked like a detective story.
Yeah?
The things that happened in the crime world.
Hell, I was probably having a meeting with him right at that time. I don't know. I just met him, too. I don't know much history on him. Have you met him? You know him?
No, I know his wife. I don't know his wife. His wife is Jesse Stewart's daughter.
Oh.
Jane Stewart.
Uh-huh.
And they came. I didn't know there was a feature story on her in the Sun. Oh, I'd say last spring. And I tried at that time to get in touch with her. And I ran across her path several times, but it was after she'd already gone along ahead of me. And now, you know Jesse Stewart.
Not really. It's another.
Well, you see, I knew him well when I was in Kentucky. Lived up there in his area. And he came over there. And Jesse's one of those fellas who would come to a college place and get the auditorium. And you'd feel his presence for a week or two after he left. we never thought he was much of a writer or much of anything else, but he certainly had the gift of gab, and he could put you see, you're talking about these people. Well, he could talk about anybody in that same terms and just bring them to life. And furthermore, carry that whole congregation with him. He's phenomenal, but he's no scholar, and he knows a lot of things. He's prolific. He writes poetry. He got a lot of prizes, and they put him in anthologies. He's from one of the East Kentucky, the Appalachian people. Well, when I was up there, this girl was just a child, and she's grown up now, and she's got a PhD in Italian, of all things. How she got over there, I don't know. But anyhow, she came to town on the crest of a wave of the publishers' parties. She's written this book. It's called a novel. I read it, and she was just in and out of town, going to Nashville and Louisville and one place after another, and she finally had a publisher's party here. But I didn't see it, so I didn't get there. But I bought one of the books and read it. And I can see Jesse in it a great deal. And she's on the wrong side of the fence from the university, the academic writers. She writes about people she knows, you see, and they just write about abstractions. And they use the, you know, the this heightened poetic sense that the Iowa School of Writers has popularized, has established amongst in the academic world. That's one thing I react to out here, and also in those little chapters I wrote. Well, I just wanted to catch her, and they told me, they said who she was, that she was the wife of this law professor. So I called the law down there, and I talked to him one time, and Debbie proposed to get in touch with him. But you know, it's a curious thing. These people who are gifted at getting around, when they work with me, they never get around. Now, Debbie has this great skill, you see, of going from one person to another and group to group and all like that, and she does it with all of that background. But she never made contact with anybody so we didn't get, we missed her. And just the other day, I figured I'll get in touch with her a little bit if she's still here. I'll find her, and I'll go see her. I want to see her for the simple reason that she's on the wrong side of the fence from those people up there. And also, I know Jesse Stewart, and I like him. And I just like to pay my respects. But she's the one, actually, who ought to pay her respects to me, because Jesse, I knew him well enough that he could stick her onto me. But, of course, Jesse's got so many friends everywhere he goes, he just picks up friends, you see, like a dog.
Just jumping on. Huh?
Yeah. So, I talked to him on the phone once, and that's all I did.
You still hadn't run into her?
No, this was just the other day. But I will.
He's supposed to have sent me something in my paper that I've written, and he was copying it and going to send it back. It's the only copy I got, and it's still not back, so I've got to call him one way or the other.
So you don't know anything about him?
No, other than meeting with him for 2 hours. I can't make a strong assessment of him, no. He's a right peculiar fellow, and he was hard to put into any categories. He's soft-spoken, very, very, you know, he's sort of unassuming.
Yeah.
He's got certainly not a hard. He's not in the business world. Doesn't seem to be.
Well, they said out there that he was a professor of law.
Yes, that's what he is.
Well, now, if he's that far along, you see, he's pretty gifted. You don't get to be a professor of law that easy.
Well, there was one thing that I rather appreciated, because in our meeting we had the money man and me and him, the lawman, and we started talking about something, and he said, well, that's not law. That's finances. That's not for me to decide. That's for you to decide. And he drew that distinction 4 or 5 times. It's a nice thing to see him do that,
yeah.
You know, because it was very little minor points. You know, that money crosses over into legality. And he just simply said, well, that's not a point of the law. That's a point of opinion when you get down to money. You know, judgment. There's no law backing that up. He's interested in this project I've got. Quite interesting. So, it's funny how you run into people accidentally, off known. I'm glad to find that out about his wife.
Uh-huh.
See, that gives me a handle on him now.
Yeah. Or she's gifted.
See, I can talk to him better, probably, if we just get in on that handle.
Yeah.
See, I think we both are a little bit distant than talk, because you're just meeting. Really
let me tell you, Wade, what I found is that if I'm going to have any independence at all, not lose my shirt, I can't run the show. I've had to run it out here, but I didn't choose to do it. But I've got to help somebody else run the show. I got to run interference. And I know how to do that. I can do it. And, you know, the world is so complex, and there's so many people that's who are more shrewd than you are, say, or I am. It looks to me like you, or anybody, but I'll just say you, are inviting trouble when you are playing a game of wits. Now, there's so many people sharper than you are. And the only way I see it is just run interference to other people and just get in on their game. Now, you could work in with this bird down here with his horse farm, Hobo. And you could sell a few horses for him. I don't know what you do. But I just mean that's a kind of remote example.
Yes, it's one thing. It's hard to chew a bone when you're trying to run the game.
Yes. And it closes you out. And what it means is you got to work through other people, and you depended on them, and that you can't depend on them.
No.
And the one set of people you can't depend on are lawyers. If they're not ignorant, they're crooks.
Yeah, and I don't know what to make of one that's a professor, guy.
Now, you see, if I wanted to work with cattle now, I wouldn't anymore venture on my own. I'd go up there and somehow work in with Bill Sneed. And if I was more interested in cattle than, you know, if I was really interested in cattle and learned a lot about it, see, there's plenty of room up there. I mean, he can just use all sorts of help that he does without. Gets along without it because he can't get it. You see? And I could, and furthermore, you see, it could be that in a short time, I'd make more money than he would. Because what I make is clear money.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there's one side of it, of course, where he makes the money. that his investment, you see, with the inflation, it goes up. His operation there is worth so much more every day with inflation. You can't compete with that. But I don't know how to face that. I wouldn't try to beat the inflation. I mean, it's something you got to call it. Now, you see, I'm not advising you. I'm just talking with you.
Well, this thing is working. It's more than just actually making money. It's really a thing I'm concerned with, this McAnopy company. It's sort of an attempt to hedge against invasion of the future. I mean, people, they're beginning to see it, but everybody thinks McAnopy is going to be McAnopy.
Well, that's you know, that's it's shameful they can't see it. It's amazing, isn't it?
And it's they don't understand that its death knell was this last 18 months.
Yeah.
Ended McAnopy. That was the end of it.
Yeah.
There's no more McAnopy.
There's no more anything out here.
And if I want to see McDonald's hamburger sitting on Main Street, guy, it's a bother.
Yeah.
And the hell of it is, you can make money by keeping them off of that, too. So you can do two things at one time.
Well, I didn't heard of that approach.
Oh yeah, what we're trying to do is buy most of the Main Street, any property we can get a hold of, and then you keep it in a quieter type atmosphere, and encourage. Well, they're already coming in with antique stores. But encourage business like that, a craft shop or things of this nature.
But you own the stuff.
Yeah, you own it, so people can't move in there with some big noisy trade thing.
Yeah.
And you can build a craft type shopping center down there that will sustain a lot of people, and make money, and use the property up so nobody else can come in there and put a 7-Eleven shopping center down there.
Yeah. Now that's outside of the town council.
Oh yes, it's outside of town council. It's private enterprise type thing.
And where does the income come from?
Rentals on property. See.
But they all cost so much.
If I can buy them now.
Weaver won't set $1,000 for that thing next to Buster.
Yeah. That's not a lot of money, guy.
Not now.
See, on my building, if this process goes through, I'll get a minimum of 400, if not 500 or 600, rental for the downstairs of that building per month.
God almighty, it's going into a financial world, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. Because those shops will be worth it. And you don't make them fancy shops. You want them old. You want old shops. But see, I mean, I got my building to quite a steal. But still, when you start talking about returns like that, even $30,000 on Weaver's store, the shop space is worth it. It's worth it to Silva already.
This is not a crystal remedy.
No. It's not. There's no speculation involved in it because
there's no element of risk.
I'm not risking anything right now, and I don't have any money to risk, and I'm not about to risk it, and I'm not going to spend a lot of time doing the damn thing.
Yeah.
I'm just organizing it, and if we get the money together, I'll proceed to try to purchase the properties. And then plan it. Now, I won't plan it all. An architect does the planning. It can be time consuming, but I hadn't spent a lot of time on it so far.
I see.
Idea is viable, very viable, because the monies that go into it. See, my brother, we've already bought one piece of property. Well, hell, nobody's lost any money. There ain't no way you can lose. The thing's a rental piece of property, and it's taking care of itself. It's a good investment.
You and your brother?
Yeah. he's put up the the big down payment money, and I've put up a few dollars for repairs and stoves and things like that. And handle the deal for him, so I'll be a certain percentage owner in it. But if nothing else happens, he's still got a piece of investment
property.
Now you're
going to have to take that next street that goes out to I-75.
Well, yeah. We'll go as far as we can on purchasing property to sort of preserve the place, the atmosphere of the place. I've gotten bothered by people complaining about everybody ruining everything, and nobody seems to take action on their own part to do anything positive.
Yeah.
Now, a lot of people, if this thing goes through, they say, well, hell, you know, you've ruined Micanopy because it's different. Well, Micanopy's already dead. It's just sitting duck. It's a sitting duck.
Just ready to be taken over.
Yeah. It's
you don't know
going
who
up.
He is.
Just briefly.
You see, he's like that. He spouts off and does nothing. Of course, he's 72. He doesn't have to worry forever about it. It's a shame they can't. Somebody can't do it. What do you think I would do with this? Just get up and leave?
Lord, I'll tell you the truth. If I were you, I wouldn't think about it, because you might get down in the dumps one day and figure $200,000 looks pretty good, and you've sold your world out from under you. That'd be awful tempting, you know, if you got cross fire with somebody. But this is a world. It's just like, I mean, the same thing as Buster's place. That's his world. And see, there's no way you're going to replace this now.
You can't
find this existence.
No, they're not anymore.
This is the end of the run.
End of the run. Yes, and the run won't last too much. Laura. Be surrounded.
Should be some relatively simple way to at least get a little rental off of the land without being bothered by people too much, you think?
I don't think there is.
No simple way.
Mm-hmm. I've never found. The only thing that I ever worked out here was Bill Wynn when he got watermelons back there.
Yeah, I remember that.
He didn't bother a thing. He didn't break a thing. He didn't worry anybody.
Yeah, and he had a good crop, didn't he?
Oh, he made money. He made more money there than I've ever made out here, all told. And he wasn't trying to make money. He just putting it in as a favor to the community. And he liked to get out of his store. Oh, he'd come up here every day, you see, just racing along, you see, in that white station wagon.
Yeah, I would think if you had a store like that, it'd pay you to have a patch somewhere.
Yeah. Rob Wood, you see, in my time, was the outdoor manager. He'd take care of all the farming, you know. Bill Webb would look at it and he make a decision, all like that, but Rob would do the actual work. He takes the right smarts.
Now, which one is it? Bill Wynn that's got the place in Micanopy now?
Bill Wynn's millionaire.
Yeah.
He married Christian's daughter, and Christian owned that store before Wynn took it over. Uh-huh. And he moved to Ocala, Christian did, and got into the finance business. And no telling how much money he's got. He's still down there. He's elderly. And Bill Wynn left here because everybody made him the executive of their will down there. Those old ladies at McIntosh. So he moved down to Tampa and got into the sporting goods business.
Well,
I haven't kept up with him, but I seem to have heard from somebody that he didn't stay in the sporting goods business very long. But he don't have to be in any business. He got so much money. Old man Christian got so much money.
Well, who in the hell is it that has got this fenced off place right across from Mr. Smith and over in Micanopy? It's got a, they're going to put up a hardware store.
Well,
I thought that was connected with the one in McIntosh somehow.
Well, he sold out. He bought Wynn out.
Uh-huh.
And then he sold out.
Uh-huh. And, oh, that's the way it
and
goes.
And doubled or tripled his money down there.
Yeah.
And he didn't want all that anyhow. There's just too much of it. And so he got Robert's place and built that palace over there and barn.
Oh, and crazy animals, ostriches.
Build a pond, put ducks in it, and geese.
You got ostrich and peacocks. God Almighty, he's got a lot of things out there. That's just the world for him to play in, then.
Yeah.
Including the store.
Yeah. I'd leave the store out if it was me. But see, he apparently needs a store to play with.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I hope they sell nails and bolts or something like
I
that.
I do too. Good Lord Almighty. If they just get a good selection of that, it'd be worth it. They'd be, that's a service to our area.
It's a service to the area. You see, Mr. Morganson used to do that.
Yeah. Good God Almighty. It's been a number of times, you know, like you even run out of number eights. You don't need but a handful more. It's a 2-hour process to get them. Plus driving 30 miles.
I don't know. You see, my mentality is so limited. It's just a certain type of people that I can deal with. Now, all these people you've been dealing with, you see, that you deal with, if we sit down to lunch, they'd get up at the soup and just let me have the rest of the lunch.
Let me tell you about last night regarding that. See, Bill and I wasn't letting him get into too much talk because I'd been cooked up on a few things myself, so I was doing more expounding than necessary. And I kept saying, well, you know, that's the way we see it through this inquiry. You know, and I said, yeah, you see, here's the way that goes. And after a while, hell, guy, it was about 10:30 or 11. It was later than I thought it was. And we'd been drinking some beer. And old Bill, all of a sudden, he said, well, Jesus Christ, Wade, what the hell is guy doing now? Let's go over and see him. He just came out of him. He said, what's the guy doing now? Let's go see him. That was funny.
Yeah.
God Almighty. And, you know, I was just sitting. I was really trying to get into this thing and explain. I said, well, see, that's what, you know, that's what's going on. Going to get up and leave right then. And he's such a bumble bust, that guy is. He's phenomenal. Got him over, Beverly had a flat over here in Evanston. He volunteered to go change the tire. Well, he rung off 3 lugs. And that's one of his characteristics. He handles things like that very frequently. He says he's been a little more calm about it now. And when he went off on his last trip, he said one of the things that cost him an awful lot of money before his car finally blew up altogether, he had a flat tire, mm-hmm. And this time he didn't put the lugs on tight enough and the wheel ran off.
Yeah, that sounds like me.
So, I said, well, Jesus Christ, Bill, you, for long, you know about all there is to know about wheels.
Who is it, Bill?
Yeah, Bill Schaff, his name.
Oh, yeah.
His father's military, retired military. He comes from that regime. He's broken very much from it, but he comes from it. And he was expressing a great appreciation for his father after having stayed 6 days with this guy, Gaines, Southern Baptist father.
Yeah.
He saw his own family in a brand new light.
Yeah, yes.
See, he said, if there's one thing, his old man is, you know, his military. Everything is absolute. Well, wait a minute, that's not right. The small one goes on that end. You know, the little balls of string put up and filed away with a number on them. And orderly and precise and opinionated. But he's allowed other people to live their life.
Yeah.
Says, well, all right, if that's what you want, go ahead. And he goes on with his life. He doesn't change his life, but he doesn't bother with them. You know, if he can help them out, there's a love thing, he'll do it. He gives them gifts and everything.
Yeah.
Is not right? The Southern Baptist.
Yeah. Well, that's, you know, rather a large concession, ain't it?
Certainly is. This damn Southern Baptist preacher, see, he won't allow another existence.
Mm-hmm.
Always nagging.
Yeah. Meddling.
Gotta get into line there. Whip into shape. I know which way you ought to go.
Yeah.
Old Jay Heron turned Jesus freak talking about Christian people. You know, he's the one my brother sent down from Maryland about 3 or 4 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And he married Marty Uhl's daughter, who lives in the big house. I must have spoken about him several times. Oh, he was a renegade. Never hold a job.
Yeah.
Never do well. He's the one that started, it took him 6 months to do any, to quit sleeping till 4 o'clock in the afternoon. And then I'd tell him to do something, explain him how to do it, and he would, by God, do it completely backwards.
Oh, that?
100% backwards. There's no better way.
Yeah.
And there wasn't anything straight about it.
Yeah.
And just a couple of weeks ago, he saw the light. Now, this is a very bizarre character in his own right. Like the last time I talked to him, he was trying to get writing advice from me so he could write pornographic literature.
You're going to follow the demand.
Yes. And now he's a Jesus freak. He's got 3 crosses up on the highway down there. Have you noticed them? Just as soon as you pass the thrift station, look on your right, coming south. And he says, I've got the wire. A fellow's gotten some wiring for me, and I've got the lights in the back of my car, and they're going to be lit at night. Something else. I said, Jay, I was talking to him about his job. I think I said, oh, well, how you doing finances, Jay? He says, well, I don't worry anymore. He said, last Sunday I gave the last money I had to the church. Monday I got $100 I never asked for. He said, I can sleep at night now. Well, they still don't have $200 for his wife to have the baby, and she's out to here. And they still owe for the last one. And when I drove up...
Are you dressed up?
I'm going to town.
Oh!
Hi!
I didn't know you were going down. Is your day?
Wednesday. Yeah. Sure am.
Well, we're going in.
Yeah, and when I drove up, the guy had bought probably $10 worth of damn goldfish.
It's time for lunch.
After
12. I need to go take care of shop, guy.
All right.
Well, I'll put...
No. Good Lord. I even went off and left Bill with no instructions. Hopefully, he's going to be
You're
my...
You're going to leave me...
Yeah.
All right.
That's not actually about Vietnam vets, so don't believe the title.
All right. I got another little story to read, about 3 pages.
Oh, I'd be glad to take it.
It'll wait a week or two.
Yeah, that's something that I wrote up a whole bunch of stuff on the Vietnam vets, but that has to do with insanity, nothing righteous.
Well,
I wish I could deal with some of the people, people like some of those that you mentioned. But I swear, that just shows my bringing up. I can't do it.
Well, we might.
That's really a cross section you've got. That's a panorama. That's a
Oh, good Lord.
Take them as it come.
Well, you see, I spent 2 or 3 hours in the morning writing on this. And at 1 o'clock, I had a meeting with Julian and this other money man. And then we talk about percentages, front money, and the real money. Now, like I left this world of economics, and within an hour and a half time, I was into that other world of economics. And I stopped to think about it. It was a lot of strange connection. Because
yeah.
I was serious about the other one, too. See, I'm serious about that other one. And you do talk percentages. You talk them. If you don't, you lose. It's just that I maintain it's a total fabrication. It's my thesis.
Now, is it percentages and all in debt? No, you didn't put that in.
No, it approaches. That actually does more or less what you're talking about. You don't conclude anything.
Yeah.
I don't see how you can, really.
You just open it up.
Right. I can go back to this and find something, and I can open that up, and it just repeats itself. It just keeps on going.
Yeah.
You don't know where it'll end. Could be a lot of different places. But there are two or three different, one of them that came out, most of this stuff comes out accidentally, but that thing, that thievery thing.
Yeah.
Galbraith helped, your thing on Galbraith helped with that, on the social virtue.
Yeah.
The approved virtue. Or institution, whatever it was. And I thought that was, it really interested me. Yeah. See, I had an experience with the gun, and how easy it is to kill with a gun. Because, as a matter of fact, it happened out here when one of these cats got bit by a snake or something. This cat that took up and tried to get rid of it, and it came back and it was hurt. And I had to shoot the cat. And it's easy, with a gun in the distance, it changes your whole thing. You don't have to deal directly with that cat. And money did the same thing with people.
Yeah.
Separated them.
Yeah.
With their reality.
Yeah, that's right. Yes. Yes, there's no direct, no contact call. Mm-hmm. I just simply, you give up, you see. I've been persistent in my time, but I've always known where persistence ends, or loses out. And when it comes to the money, there's so much money. You can't do anything about it. It's all invisible. And it can operate when you don't, before you know it. So that you don't know whose neighborhood you're living in.
In the short little space of time that you've lived here, that strange force has been in operation.
Yeah.
It's completely modified your world,
yeah.
And you hadn't had the first damn thing to do with it.
Not
the
very first. Yeah.
See, next thing you know, people are going to be nagging you to give you $250,000 for what you're sitting on.
Yeah.
And to be down here bothering you about that.
Yeah.
You know? It's terrible.
Yeah.
Jeez.
I got here just the right time. You see all that road out to the River Styx? That was the old man Mitchell Boyd, you see.
Mm-hmm.
I used to go over there and felt very much at home with him. Over across the street there, there was colored people. I forget the woman's name. She was right interesting. and on by old man Garriga's out there. And that's my beat over there on that road. And actually, I don't have any beat left.
Not a one ought to be replaced.
No. And out there, Miss Guthrie, you see, she's tidying up her house and putting on that plastic brick, and it's affected her, you see.
I've got to go see her. She thinks I don't like her because I don't go see her.
Well, it was you.
But I think it'd be worth it to go out and jive her about that.
That you can. I think that's a serious matter with her.
Her and that face fixing.
And furthermore, it's inevitable now. She marches me right square dab in that living room, sets me down, and nothing happens. If she'd stay in the kitchen, I could make something happen, and she could too. But nothing happens in the living room. I'm just not a man for living rooms.
Yeah, that's the most important feature in any home, the damn table.
Yeah. That's where it goes.
Yes, it is. The kitchen's where it should be. No doubt about it.
You going to Tampa?
No, I think I messed around too long making take.
I wish somehow, maybe Wade ought to take a little of that home with him, Pete.
I'm going to take a little
of the same. Well, Wade ought to take a little of that home with him. I certainly don't need any of it. I don't know, it just occurred to me when you were talking. Just to see the world as some of those birds do that you run into.
Well, I tell you that maintaining that friendship with those Chris boys has been expensive, and I hadn't done it necessarily through any exploration. It's I don't know why I did it, Guy. I'd be damned if I could tell you.
Yeah.
And I've known it's been expensive for a long time. And it's hard to say that any direct rewards come from it, because that's a weird, weird group of people.
Yeah.
they do me in a friendly sort of way.
Yeah.
And it has been done. I had no idea why I ever started that, but I was persistent in it. I started it and I just stayed there. They're flat.
Yeah.
See, Phil, he can't enter. I tried hell a long time ago to get into another world with him, and he stayed home.
Well, you see, I've got this problem. I can get up to a certain point, and I can, as Mr. Nealon says, his stepfather was a production man. He could raise beautiful grapes and make beautiful wine and have beautiful peaches and dry them and dry the figs, and they would just take the prize in the county fair. But he wasn't a market man. Well, now that's what I find. The only thing is, it's not really the market side of it, as you'd think of it. It's these people that work with me, I can't get them quite to put what they do in marketable shape.
Mm-hmm.
They'll leave it a little too raw to market. And I don't, you see, it's like farming. There's so many sides of it, nobody can do it anymore by himself. Well, you see, I can do some of these things I can do out here. But then I fall short. And to save me, you see, I can't do it.
Well, guy, on that marketing thing, see, your approach in teaching these people, it's going to take some period of time not thinking about the marketing approach, because that counteracts the methodology that you get into, this style and everything else. What I mean is you need time to set up under that kind of thing, to feel free, to not feel like you've got the marketing.
I'm not talking about producing for market, but I'm talking about after you produce something, just get it in shape where you can market it. You take this stuff I did on Mr. Nealon. It's in shape to market, but the market didn't affect what I did to it, except it made me, you know, try to make it comprehensible. But they won't go ahead and finish what they do. They've turned it loose while it's still rough. Too rough to be used. And that's all of them. I've found no exceptions. Now, you see, Debbie has that remarkable collection of travel sketches she did last fall. All right? I've got the notes on there. I know the frame of mind she was in when she wrote them. And I know what she put into them. She doesn't. She didn't look at them that light. She looks at them now and says, "Good Lord, look how ignorant I was then. There's no content in them." Well, I knew it. But I knew there's something else in them. I know what it is. But I can't get them in shape. She's got to do the getting in shape, and I'll furnish her the information. You see?
Wait, you might as well help you.
No.
Maybe what I mean to say is, they won't turn editors of their own stuff. I think maybe that's it. It's not really selling it. It's just getting it in shape. I can't. They get to that point and then they hang up. See, she's ashamed of that stuff. Well,
yeah.
I'm not ashamed of it. I'm very much interested in it. It has a great deal to offer. She wants to go on to something big and better, and I want to use what we got already. For one thing, she does something that none of the Ivy League does. She's right out of school, and she's articulate. And they go for years and are never articulate. And it also shows the limitations you see of the Ivy League. They don't know how to make them articulate. Well, my proposition was, to me, I said something about it to her, but she didn't understand it, is that's what I wanted to show. That was the one thing that I kept after about, because I knew she was, I thought she could produce. That's what I wanted to show. Well, now she showed it. She's still inarticulate in that she won't go ahead and put it forward. But it's not just that. It's that way all on the line. You see, Suzanne did remarkable things. And she couldn't handle them. She couldn't quite get that last touch. You might say the editing, even with me to work with her. She did some, hell, I learned through her. She didn't teach me. I taught her, I had to show her what she'd done. It's a curious world, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
But she did it. And I couldn't do it. So, it is one damn curious world. You see, we got enough here for 6 volumes. Just one right after the other. Just turn them out.
Yeah, if you start working on anything like I'm thinking about, it's enough for 40 volumes.
May we
said what you need is a press.
Yeah. See, I did. I started off with the idea of some of the offshoots of the thing, and to begin to look at the subject itself, maybe from some of the offshoots then, you know, because nobody seems to understand the subject.
Yeah.
So you back off and say, well, okay, here's what comes out of it, you know, this kind of approach. I got a sneaky that might be a little bit valid if it worked up like that.
You see,
I don't know.
You know, it just occurred to me. Any of these scholars, these PhDs, could help me get these things in shape. I can't do it by myself. I have to have some help. There's just too much tedious work along with the information up there.
Yeah.
It's too much. I'm glad to have somebody to work with. I can do that. I hadn't thought about that.
Can you get a hold of somebody on that?
It'd be hard because they've all got their own anthills.
Hell, guy, what you need is a swift, first class, on the ball secretary.
Yeah. That's right.
Precisely that.
That's all you need.
I've seen
that. That's
women.
All you need.
I've seen women with a mentality.
If I had Debbie and she was my secretary, I could do all sorts of things that I can't do as a performer. I think she would be a first-class secretary. I don't think you could beat her. And it may be a shame to rob somebody of a first-class secretary.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm trying to get Mimi to do secretary work for me.
Yeah.
And we fell into watching TV by accident one night. And, you know, the Standard Fare was on, all these robbery private detective things. And so I said, Mimi, look, see that? That's a secretary. You see it? You know, because they always got their Lady Friday or their Our Gal Friday going on. And they, you know, they're girl wonders. They do everything. I say, there it is. You're supposed to do that. You're not supposed to blunder around and ask every single time. Keep asking what to do. You know, that girl takes it and goes. And I was preaching away. It was worth watching two of those shows. Point out secretary. Didn't change her any. But I've seen women. Hell, they're so good that they could help you in the farming. That's how good they are.
Oh yeah.
I don't give a damn what the subject is. They absorb it and they go beyond it.
And you're the greatest of these without helping.
Yes. Yes. Some of these gals, I mean, they absolutely run a business.
Well, it's
totally
like,
right.
It's like I told you. This woman, this Welsh woman who wrote the book on the evolution of man. She said she was satisfied with that. But the evolution of women, she wasn't satisfied with. And she's the one that showed that women were evolved from dolphins.
That's such a marvelous thesis. I love it.
I wish I had the name in the book. I'd go get it.
Well, John Lilly, I never heard it directly, but he alluded to the fact that his wife fell in love with one of his dolphins. Now, I don't know what the connection is there. He spoke something about the love affair of his wife and the dolphin. That's before he turned them all loose.
Yeah. Oh, Lord.
Well, maybe, guy, I don't know. I think a precision person is what you need. You don't need an involved person.
Yeah, thanks.
You don't need an involved person. What are you expecting you to be?
No, I'm perfectly feel at ease.
You don't want it.
You see, you get to involve people and you buy yourself a bucket of troubles.
Yeah. If they're all involved.
Yeah. These precision people can go through that lightly, the whole thing. Nothing bothers him.
Rick's up there working on those tapes in his element. He's a precision man. And what I'd been trying to do out here was make an involved man.
You've been working him backwards, that's it, huh?
Yeah.
I think that's exactly it. Just give him a little something to tinkle with, and he's probably
well, guy, I still hardly accept that fact you put down on that library paper. But if they even thought it up, and he's got more precision about it than than I suspected, if he wanted to annotate those damn tapes. Hell, I wouldn't even have suggested it myself.
No.
'Cause I know how much work there is. And, you know, I could have taken 3 minutes of it. And after that, I said, well, this is absurd. There's no way. I mean, what a boring thing to do.
Annotate what Mr. Weaver does when he breaks corn.
It's phenomenal how bad people want to know that. I don't know who I ran into the other day, but I've been on, you know, I get off on owning things, but I was on this again, and that's what they want to know. You know, it's...
Process.
Right. Well, what are you getting out of this? You know, what kind of facts you're running? Yeah. Beats me.
And what I get when I go back to my office, that everybody wants to do what they want to do. So you see, I catch it. I want to do what I want to do. I don't want to do what somebody else wants done. Well, you know what the answer is? When you somebody take it, tells you that? There ain't any answer. That's a question that just resolves itself. Once they get into that line of thought, all you do is just drink another beer. You got to know when you're licked.
Yeah. What bothers me about that one thing about doing what you want to do is every person 18, 17 years old has adopted that attitude as their main thought in life.
Yeah.
And by God, they can't learn anything.
Mm-mm.
That stops their learning process.
Yeah. It absolutely does. So you see, when I was working on Mr. Nealon, I wasn't doing with that what I wanted to do. I was just trying my damnedest to make something of it. And I'd look at it, and I'd see what it was. And they'd jump me. And I'd look at it again, you see. And when I finally got it in a shape, I passed it around, they looked at it, and they weren't too pleased with it. I looked back at it, and I saw how slow it was. So I went back over it and reset it and pushed him a little faster. See, that wasn't me. That wasn't what I wanted. I wasn't doing with it what I wanted to do. I was just doing what the material demanded. And so far as I could ascertain it, by sweat. But there was no inspiration in it. And no... nothing answering to my own desires. And it's beautiful. Mr. Neal in the West. That's all the whole thing's worth. It is just beautiful. But that's as far as we can take it. After you just be kind of agent, it shuts off.
I keep on getting biblical about things, but by God, you know, that's that denying yourself or say it has something to do with that, to be able to begin to understand and look at things. You've got to get that self out of the way somehow.
Yeah, you can't stand in the way.
It's got to move over.
Somehow or other, you got to project. You see, I can project, but I can't do it by myself. I got to have people around. I got to have Mr. Nealon around. I got to have a good bit of turmoil, nervous energy. It just takes pulling on me from various directions to make my mind work at all. That's what I put into chapter one, what it took to make my mind work. And a good many pulls, all of them mean. Somebody else's mind.
Well, I better go organize something.
Well, I think we've got a little ways. You ready to go, Hank?
Yes, I'm ready.
Well, Well, come on, don't run off.